Hi, I'm Sarah, and this is Open Indie, a podcast about indie devs and indie games made in Europe. Let's talk today about a catastrophic indie dev studio and about their game, in which you mainly use giant hammers. The game is called Bish Bash Bots, and it brings back the classic tower defense genre, which we at Open Indie absolutely admire. But it comes with a twist. You have to build the towers yourself in the game with a giant hammer. And if the enemies are almost at their goal, you can try to bash them back, or accidentally move them forward. The studio developing this game is called Catastrophic Overload, located in the UK. My husband Eve met up with James Leatherby, one of the co-founders of Catastrophic Overload. They both talked about bish bashing tactics and hopefully not too catastrophic backstory.
I'm here today with James, and James is from the indie studio Catastrophic Overload. They are located in Bristol, UK, and were founded 2019.
Oh yeah, I'm James. I'm one half of Catastrophic Overload. It's me and Josh. We've been going since 2019. And we like making silly multiplayer games so far.
Your first game was called Drinkmore Glurp. That's the one. What's Glurp?
Some mystical soda from another planet.
We went through so many words. I can't believe we ended up with Glurp in the end.
It's like it seems to be our track record. We've gone with a very long indie studio name. Catastrophic Overload really rolls off the tongue. And then we went with Drink More Glurp, and honestly that spreadsheet of Drink More Blurp, Drink More Slurp, you know, it was just a long list, and at the time we just really liked the way it sort of rolled off the tongue. And it's these aliens having watched broadcasts of sporting events from Earth are like, oh yeah, well, it's all about the sponsors, isn't it? So, you know, we've got to start with the main sponsor. So we've got to have the drink first. So this whole Olympics, for reasons. It's some whole sport, summer games, that was it. That's what we went with. Summer games all based around different sponsors that would modify the gameplay. And yeah, Glurp was the headline sponsor. So it made sense to call the game after them.
Makes absolute sense. You want to satisfy your sponsors, nevertheless.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, they're the most important, right?
Glurp rolls off the tongue, so it was a really catchy title. Also, your name, Catastrophic Overload. I really liked the name.
it sort of felt fitting at the time because, we had to come up with a name really quite quickly when we were working on Glurp. And I'd just say, from Josh and I's experience, it sort of seemed quite fitting for our personalities of, like, everything, like, well, I would say probably with indie dev, just everything exploding around you, and it seemed quite fitting. I mean, we often shorten it to co-games, so that would be the, like, you know, once we've established ourselves a bit, I think we'll be allowed to shorten it, but until then, it will be very long.
Makes sense, but I love it. It's really nice. And since Drink More Glurp was also a party game, so basically you took it and you took this over to your next game that you're currently working on, Bish Bash Bots. And could you tell to our listeners a little bit about the game? Can you explain maybe the gameplay a little bit? Imagine our listeners closed their eyes and just listening to your voice, what would they see if you could paint them a picture?
A very colorful tower defense meets brawler. You sort of work together akin to an Overcooked style game, you know, one to four players up on the screen at once, and you'll be defending your EMP device against waves of bots that have gone wrong, and you need to defend this EMP while it charges, and then you have to bash the bots, build turrets, use gadgets, all these things to help defend your EMP while it charges, and then boom, you set off the EMP and you reset the robots, and you're onto the next level. That was probably a terrible description of it, but don't close your eyes. Just look at it. It looked much better than it sounds.
It was a perfect description, so it was really good. You were kind enough, as I mentioned before, to provide us with some keys of your alpha, and Sarah and I got the chance to bash some bots in our free time, and we really enjoyed it, since we're both fans of tower defense games and also games like party games that you all just mentioned before. It was a really nice blend, so it's not like you're only building towers and wait until the wave is over, but you're also having this brawler element, which makes it more interactive, and paired with the art style that you have, it's really a lot of fun.
Oh, that's great. We very much went into it wanting to do something, you know, it's more casual. It's not like,
hardcore tower defense. You know, it's like, yeah, it's got that element to it, but it was always meant to be casual, something that, you know, you could just play with friends and just, or even the couples, and just, you know, sort of have a good time playing. It's not supposed to be super stressful. It's not quite as bad as Overcooked, I would say, at times, but, you know, towards the end of the game, we certainly ramp up the difficulty. But yeah, no, I'm really glad that you got the sort of, when you messaged me, it was, oh yeah, I get Adventure Time vibes from it. And I'm like, yeah, you know, Adventure Time and Bravest Warriors and those Saturday morning kind of cartoons were a big inspiration for us when it came to the art style. It was something, it's more my area that I handled, all the sort of art and design side, where Josh does the coding and also the design side. But, you know, it was something that I went into this game very, very much wanting to have, that almost like a toy box, a tactility to it. So, you know, you've got the like collectible vinyl toys and things like that, that, you know, you've got that sort of plasticky smooth kind of texture, but you feel like you could just pick them up and play with them, and very much like an Aardman style as well, you know, with the big smooth chunky hands and things like that. You know, all of our childhood inspirations sort of came alive when we were sort of concepting up this game, and our artist Alex has done such a fantastic job of sort of realizing our vision for it, and Corey, our environment artist, sort of like took that concept art and really helped us bring it to life. So, you know, absolutely massive shout out to the team. They've done such a great job, and couldn't be happier with sort of where we're at with it right now. Yeah,
what we really enjoyed was the blend of tower defense and bashing. So as you mentioned before, in a tower defense, typically you have to combine towers, you have to click through a lot of different types of towers, and then you have enemies that are weak to some towers but are not too weak to others, etc. And in this game, basically you pick up the controller, you build your first towers, air tower and ground towers, and then you can start bashing robots. And the nice thing about this is that you also can influence the path of the robots by bashing them, which sometimes can be beneficial or not, which we also found out.
Oh, we've all accidentally bashed a bot into the EMP shield accidentally when trying to defend it. But yeah, that's a massive thing for us, you know, like having been fans of tower defense games, you know, we were like, what can we do a little bit differently? And being able to interact with the bots and be able to push them off the path, it is like one of our massive major USPs, because it's not something that I can say that we've seen all that often. And we really love when you've got a big crowd of bots coming towards you and you can just run swinging the hammer, just like bam bam bam, just like carve a
charge
path through these bots. Yeah, exactly. It's so satisfying. And we've got some gadgets in the game as well to help with the defending, and one of the ones you start with is a force field. So you sort of deploy this bubble around you and you can just push a huge crowd of these bots back. It's super fun.
You already talked a little bit about the influences for Bish Bash bots. What other games can it be compared to? Is there something comparable? I say you drew inspiration from.
Yeah, I mean, we can draw the obvious parallels with games like Overcooked, but Josh and I were big fans of the Pixel Junk Monsters tower defense games. Josh very much loved the 2D one, and I really loved the second one, the 3D one. It sort of neatly melded the love of that series together. Like me and my partner Emily had so much fun with the second one, and doing a little dancing by the towers and stuff. You know, it's just great fun, and being able to sort of put our spin on games in this area is so rewarding. And I would definitely say the Pixel Junk games.
James, now to the most dreaded question, and I promise this will be the hardest question. I know it's the hardest question for every developer when the game is built.
Yeah. I can take it.
Have you set a release date yet?
We have an idea. I don't know if I'm allowed to say or not, actually. That's a little weird.
Do you think it will be out this year?
Yes. We're definitely committed to it coming out this year. And that probably doesn't leave... not to date recording this, but it doesn't leave us a great deal of time to do that. So you know, we're hoping, I'll just say, I was hoping September time. We're hoping September time. But barring anything that comes up that might throw us off, which you may wonder why Josh isn't here today, and that might be a clue, but yes, we're hoping September, and
so September-ish. Nice. Well, and are you planning for a full release, or are you going to go down the early access route, or did you not decide yet?
It'll be a full release, I think. I don't know. we've had no experience doing early access stuff, and a game like this probably would in some ways benefit because we're going to have to do a lot of balancing to get this game right. But we're working with Firestoke Games, who are publishing the game, and they're committed to helping us with lots of playtesting and QA, and you know, we're going to do some very robust tests and get lots of playtesting in as much as we possibly can before release. That's one of the big challenges of a game like this, is not just making it work for four players, but one player. You know, we it was one of our sort of core, what do people say, core pillars in going into this, was making sure that it would work single player, or that if you didn't have any friends, that you could still get a full experience out of the game. It's something that we learned from Blur, being that it's very much based around, you know, having large groups of people to play together. That, you know, it had a challenge mode, it had a single player aspect to it, but the real game was, you know, you could play like 20 people if you really wanted to. And we sort of learned from that, and obviously from the dreaded pandemic, that, you know, you can't always rely on that. And it just so happened that it worked out for this game, that it would work single player and does work single player. And the other aspect that led into it was doing online as well. You know, we're tackling a lot of things with this that we've not ever done before. Never done 3D. I completely learned Blender from scratch to do this, which was super fun. It was super lucky that we had the opportunity to sort of have a bit of time to learn a new skill. And, you know, Josh has only done 2D games up until now. So that was super cool that we get to spread our wings a little bit.
Did you learn Blender by yourself?
I just did it. Yeah, I mean, I tinkered with it a little bit prior to learning, but yeah, I just dived in. I personally find I learn best when I have a task at hand. If I have something I need to achieve, then I find it easier to apply my learning to that. So I probably brute forced it. I probably could have done a course and learned some things, but I like to just click all the buttons until it does the thing I want.
Nice. Likewise. Yeah, I picked up Blender a few years ago as well, and there are quite nice tutorials on YouTube, I think. And there's one guy who builds a donut every year in Blender, and that's a Blender donut tutorial.
Yes, is that the Blender guru guy?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, this one. Yeah.
I still haven't done the donut. I've been sort of meaning to go back to it to be like, I wonder if I could just, because I can never do a tutorial in like real time. I've always got, you know, you got to keep start stopping it all the time, rewind. What did he say? Or what did they say? What did she say? Oh, yeah. Replay, let's try again. It would be quite nice if maybe I'd got to a point where I was good enough to just, you know, do it alongside. But there's still so much for me to learn, even in Blender. Like I say, we hired Corey, who was our 3D environment artist, and he'd been doing Blender for 10 years. So when I open up his files, I'm like, okay, so you're using a thing here I've never seen. let's try and figure this out. And that's been quite fun.
Yeah, makes sense. So, but it takes practice. So the most important thing, however you do it, is just pick it up and keep doing it until you get it.
I would say a lot of game devs would probably say that, wouldn't they? Is just try and make something. If you have something in mind that you want to make, just go make it and figure it out. I'll say, this might just be me, but I need to have the thing in mind that I want to make, and I'll just force myself to make it.
At what stage of the development process are you at the moment?
We just completed, I guess, what you'd call a beta. Everyone's got different definitions of what an alpha and a beta is, but we're sort of content locked now. So at this point, we're just doing lots and lots of bug fixing and lots of balancing. So maybe we might sneak a few things in under the radar, but don't tell the porting company. But it's close, I would say. There's a lot of little balancy things and sort of tweaking the waves to work better, the waves of bots, and sort of seeing if we can eke out any extra little surprises along the way for the player. But it's mostly there.
From your development journey with Bish Bash Bots, what challenges did you face so far? Or what was the most challenging thing, if you had to pick one?
Yeah, most challenging thing. I mean, for the studio, it would be online, no question. So we're using Photon. So we're using Photon Quantum, But initially, we were looking at using Fusion. So there are different packages that handle, do a lot of the heavy lifting online for you. But we sort of found out that Fusion wasn't going to be very performant on Switch, and it was a big platform for us to make this game work on Switch. So we sort of had to do a lot of rewriting early on. That was quite a hit, but we appear to have recovered. but that was definitely a big challenge, and I wouldn't say this was a bad challenge. I mean, it was a different kind of challenge. Was just working with a team. So, you know, we were blessed to be able to hire Alex, who interned with us, and he's our concept artist and 2D artist. It was amazing to be able to hire him on a long-term contract, and the same for Corey. And we also hired Charlie, who was a sort of junior Unity developer, so he could do a bit of the UI work to help Josh out. And we've got Ben doing the audio, and we've got another intern, Imogen, who was doing some creative writing for us. And so that was a nice challenge to have, which was sort of managing the team, making sure everybody was, you know, aligned to the vision, knew what they were doing, and find time in the day to do my own work along with doing that. So, but honestly, they've all done such an incredible job. I couldn't be more proud of the team, and you know, hopefully this does well, and we'll try and poach them back.
What would you say went pretty well?
The level design ended up working out quite well, I think. We sort of came up with a nice system of using sort of a grid-based system to help design the path, and were able to like pass that sort of block over to Alex, the concept artist, who could, you know, design the level based around, or visualize the level based around our sort of layout, and then handed it over to Corey, and that all just went really smoothly. That was great.
When did you start developing Bish Bash Bots?
We didn't really take, I think we had like maybe a couple of weeks off after Glurp came out. I think Glurp released sort of in a really tough time. Obviously it was the pandemic, and I mean, who releases a local party game during a pandemic? Well, we do, apparently, because we didn't really have a choice at the time. We had to sort of launch. But just to touch on that briefly, it's been nice to see it have like a second wind recently. Clearly, much more people getting together and playing games together locally in the same room. You know, it might be seen as old hat, but it's always going to be my sense, is playing games together with people in the same room. I think that's sort of just the real sort of drive behind our studio has always been that kind of experience, and I suspect most of our games will be based around that. But we had a couple of weeks after Glurp where we took off. We maybe spent, I want to say, around 6 months on sort of an initial prototype, which was a different game, which was a base defense game. So the idea would be that, you can draw a lot of things that we have from that game that we took over to this game. Like, again, four players up on the screen together, all working together to solve or complete the task. And the idea would be that you would have a little base in the middle of the screen, and you'd build your turrets inside the walls, and the enemies would approach from the outside, and they would be able to damage and break the walls down and encroach on the inside of the base. But and that reminds me, you could also pick up and drag the turrets around. That was like one of the big things we were trying to make work for a while. And all turrets would be manually controlled. That was the other thing. So you'd sort of deploy these turrets, you'd run around and sort of, you know, choose which turret you wanted to fire. But we couldn't make it work. We were like, it's just not feeling good. It's too many things that aren't fun. And at that point, we sort of pivoted. We sort of took the things we liked about that, and we sort of went, well, maybe we should try something more akin to what we like playing. And we like tower defense games. Josh has always had aspirations to make one. So it's like, okay, well, let's turn our attention to that. What could we do differently with a tower defense game? And we very much took the base defense game was also going to have thousands of enemies. So we did a lot of investigation into ECS and dots, and obviously that's totally not finished. I don't even think it's still properly finished in Unity. So we sort of abandoned that and went over to the tower defense route, but we brought over the idea of having lots of enemies, and we have some manual controlled turrets within Bish Bash Bots. So you have some special turrets that will be level specific that you can sort of get in and manually control. And then later on in the game, you unlock like a laser turret that you can get in and control where you shoot the laser. So, you know, we took some of the best bits from that, and we brought that over to Bish. And then so I would say, so our the official development started in January 20, what are we, I guess it would be 22? Yeah. 22? God, time is an illusion at this point, I must say. We've been super heads down working on this thing for a while now. But so it's been about 2 years, I would say, if you include like the prototyping phase and stuff like that.
Regarding the Switch release and the multiplayer part that you said, it makes absolute sense. So when I saw the game the first time and saw, okay, 4-player co-op, it's, you have to put it on Switch. It will be a super fun game to have on Switch.
You have to. Unfortunately, like, I mean, I love the Switch, I do, but it's just the hardest thing to develop for, because it's just so underpowered, and Quantum is quite hungry at times. So we've had to be very careful about optimizing things as much as we can. Our bots are, in some cases, so our basic bot is, well, we call it the domestic bot, is quite simple. We have a couple of other bots that there aren't as many of them on screen, so we can afford to have them be a little bit more fancy, for lack of a better word. But I'm glad you brought up the crane, because the crane is great fun, just like being able to pick up a bot and drop them into the pits. Did you try and pick up each other with the crane?
Yes, of course. Was the first thing, to be honest, before we tried picking up any bots.
We really wanted like experiences like that, where it's, you know, you can have a lot of fun on just completing the task, but you can also have a lot of fun just kind of messing with each other a little bit. You know, you can bash each other and push each other down into the pits. You can drop a turret on their head and they get a little bit stunned, or, you know, there's a lot of fun to be had just messing around and just playing. I think that's one of the things that we've wanted to really focus on, and that's the benefit of having the characters be in the action. You know, you can just be running around. You can, if I'm a person that really likes to build the turrets and figure out where stuff goes, I can do that. But if I'm a person that's just along for the ride, or if I'm a person that really just wants to go ham and just smash some bots with my hammer, you can do that. You know, it caters for lots of different play styles within a single kind of round. So yeah, I'm really pleased with how that sort of melded together quite naturally.
I'm also looking forward to trying it with 4 players as well. Right now we tried it single player and 2 players, but 4 players will be a hell of fun.
It's going to be chaotic for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a lovely case.
We have a load of stuff, like when it comes to the different biomes, that there are generally unique mechanics within each biome. So in the jungle, for example, there's a plant that will come out of the ground and try and grab you if you stand still for too long. So it encourages a different kind of play style for that level, where you can't just stand still and upgrade your turret. You've got to keep moving, otherwise you're going to get eaten. And, you know, there's also in the jungle, for example, there's a plant that you can pick the plant and it turns into a sort of a bomb that you can kind of throw and blow up the bots with. So there's just, I mean, I don't know how much to give away, you know, that's just the second biome. There's loads of stuff. So we went into it wanting to keep the gameplay, you know, constantly evolving, constantly changing. It's a thing that we sort of brought to our first game, you know, the sponsors changing the way the game plays is something that I guess we are really into, is having modifiers and unique mechanics that keep the player always like trying new things. And it's not always just, oh, the path is a little bit different in this game. It's like, oh, there's I've got to go and smash these crystals to get ammo for a special turret, or I've got to contend with a giant kraken that's going to smash all my turrets. So you know, there's some really fun stuff like that in this, and I hope people get a kick out of it.
Yeah, I'm sure about it, especially for the environment interaction, so that it's not just a static where you do your thing, basically, and there may be some authors, but as you mentioned, when the environment also works against you, or you can use the environment to your advantage, that's always fun, especially when you're able to sabotage your co-players a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. Lure the plant underneath them and then it just munches them. That's definitely a fun one.
James, now that we talked about your game, let's talk a little bit about you and your studio. You're a graphics designer, right?
That's right, yeah. I mean, before becoming a game dev, I was a graphic designer for 10 years or so. Yeah, that's my background. All the colorful things.
How did you get started in the games industry?
It wasn't until I met Josh. It's all his fault, as we often say, in that he derailed my entire career, and that's fine. You know, it's working out so far. But yeah, I mean, that's how it all started. Really, is I met Josh. So a friend of mine, shout out to Ed. He used to run a gaming meetup here in Bristol, where he'd take a PC along to a pub. There was a local pub that had like loads of screens and some big sofas, and he'd set up like a little Steam machine, bring a bunch of controllers, and randoms would show up and we'd all hang out. We'd play silly games together, you know, play things like Star Wall and Mount Your Friends, Hidden in Plain Sight, Broforce, Ultimate Chicken Horse, all the greats. You know, we used to play like for hours. And Josh had recently moved to Bristol and came along to one of these meetups, and I just got to talking to him. I was like, oh yeah, hi, what do you do? He's like, you know, working on his first mobile game at the time, showing me the game, and me being me, I couldn't help but be like, oh, you know, you could do this, or what have you thought about this? And he was like, oh yeah, well, do you want to get involved? And so that's how it all started, really. I did some color theory stuff for him, I did some UI for him, I did an app icon, and then sort of from there, I was still working at a design studio at the time. Josh was working with a startup, that were creating their own social media platform, and sort of recommended me to them. Was like, oh yeah, James, graphic designer, he's really good, did this. I'm sure he said the really good part. I've just added that for color, but anyway. I know a graphic designer. It's like, I'm sure there must have been, you know, he's all right. But I sort of ended up working with him. I quit my job and went freelance to do this work on this startup. Ended up becoming their head of design for a couple of years, and Josh was their head of iOS development. And between us, we were basically designing this social media platform. And then they spent all the money on the wrong thing, and that all folded. And so Josh and I, you know, we were like, well, we work really well together, and do we want to try making a game? And that's just where it all started. You know, we sort of brainstormed a load of ideas and things we wanted to make, and we ended up making Glurp, and it's just all gone from there, really. And it's worked out quite well. We have, you know, really complementary skills, and you know, coming from a design background, I sort of take care of the things that Josh isn't experienced in, and I can't code for the life of me, so Josh handles that, you know. And we sort of design these games together, and sort of it's a big mixing pot of our different ideas and experiences, really. And it's yeah, really, really quite good. I got lucky in that I met someone that has a very similar work ethic and design sensibility. You know, we both want things to be, we like things to be right. And, you know, obviously it's tough in game development. You don't always have the luxury of time and budget to do things to the standard. But I think we really hold ourselves to a high standard, where we always want things to be as good as possible, really. And that's worked out well for us as a studio. You know, it's one of our big ethos is just, you know, it's not just good enough, it's like, well, it's got to be right, you know.
You already told me a little bit about the name Catastrophic Overload, but I have to ask again, is there a kind of an origin story? So how did you come up with this name?
Oh gosh, yeah, I think it was just that we were really stressed at the time. I think yeah, we're always writing in caps. And I think it had a bit of a, like you say, from a code and design sort of background, it sort of lent itself to that. It's just things exploding and things overloading and our brains constantly being full of ideas and then having to try and make them. It's just, it's always a complete explosion of like, oh my God, we've got to get this right. We've got to do this, you know? So it probably is more of a description of us as individuals than it is as the studio. So yeah, eventually it will be co-games. That's my long-term goal, because that then speaks to the, you know, the cooperative aspect of, I mean, this is just like such hindsight spin, but I love it. I love it when it works out.
Oh, I really like the name.
It's so funny when you see it written like in a list of other game devs or like even in Discord, where it's just like obnoxiously long. We don't mean to be. We're not trying to stand out through having a stupidly long day, but it's fun.
Speaking of indie games and indie studios, how's support in the UK? So do you get any support as a small indie studio?
I'm sure there would be. Like, I think we've been quite fortunate in that we found a publisher for our first game that was able to give us some funding for that. And then, as I say, we're working with Firestoke Games on this game, on Bish, and they funded that as well. In terms of support, you know, we've got other studios and devs here in Bristol that we're good friends with, and we can, you know, chat about the things that go with being an indie dev. There's the Bristol Games Hub, which is a really great organization, I guess I would say, who regularly do talks and invite devs to come and show their game, and it's a good social aspect in that sense. And there's a new one recently, the Bristol Digital Game Lab, who are also sort of more from the academic point of view, bringing people together to talk about game theory and bringing people from wider afield to sort of share their knowledge, you know. So I'd say we've got support in that sense. You know, Bristol's been quite good for that. And it's actually how we found our first publisher was James Parker of Ground Chatter, who are based here at Bristol, through the Games Hub set up a sort of publisher pitching event. And that's how we were able to pitch GLURP to a bunch of publishers all at once in person. And that's how we found Yogscast Games there to be able to sort of get signed by them. So, you know, we're infinitely grateful for that kind of thing that we're able to tap into by being here. But it's more that kind of stuff rather than like money.
So that's the support network. It sounds that it's a really established scene.
Yeah. And we're new to it. You know, we're certainly, from my perspective, it's all very new. Like I say, we've only been going for a couple of years, so we're still kind of trying to find our feet within this area. You know, make ourselves become less hermited and go out and actually go to these things. And we've always found ourselves that we're always busy. So it we've been fortunate in that sense that we've sort of started up, we've made a game, and then gone straight into another one, really effectively. So. But it's nice to know that we've got, you know, there are other devs here that, you know, there's Foggy Box Games who we met while Yogscast Games, who also published their first game. So, you know, we've come up with them really, and we regularly sort of swap stories and swap support where we can. And, you know, it's nice to be able to have people from, you know, from UWE, the university, so Imogen, our writer was able to come and do some work experience with us. And so it's nice to be able to give our support as well. So it's not just one way.
It's cool to have a network like this. And that's really nice. And this indie scene, especially, that everybody likes to help each other out. So at least to the developers we talked to it so far in the last couple of years, it was always like there was, even if there was only a small network, an example, still a few people came together and set up our an example and then shared stories, experience, etc. And really try to help each other out, which is really amazing and fun.
It's super. I don't know many other industries where that could kind of happen so naturally, and where people are so willing to be helpful and forthcoming. You know, certainly coming from the design world prior to this, it's not. I've not had an experience like this before, and it's super rewarding to be able to. It's just a big gang of people problem solving. I mean, it's great. It's sort of a natural fit for a designer is all problem solving, and being able to sort of share in that with people, it's super rewarding for sure.
James, what moment in your life in the games industry will you always remember?
I've got two times so far that really stand out to me. And the first one was when we took Glurp to EGX Resd. This was before we had signed with a publisher, and we were sort of just putting it out there for people to see. And we got accepted by the Left Field Collective at Resd, so that generally is for your more sort of experimental kind of games. And so we had a great time being in and around all of these weird and wonderful games, and it sort of felt very fitting for Glurp being it's a weird and wonderful game. And just seeing people get like first person getting to see people play it, have a great time. You know, we were able to draw like a couple of crowds of people and have them all shouting and cheering. And for Glurp, we 3D printed a bunch of gold medals that if people came in like groups of like, you know, 2, 3, 4, whatever, we'd be like, hey guys, whoever wins this is going to get a medal. And you could see people's joy, you know, the joy, they'd light up and right, let's go. And then you'd be walking around the convention and you'd just see people with their medals on, just walking like, oh yeah, you got the medal, great. And that really stands out to me, as it was like the first proper convention we'd done, and it was such a good time. And the other time was, so Yogscast Games published the first game, and they set up YogCon, a convention here in Bristol for all the, you know, the streamers and everything. And we took Glurp along to that, and it was the announcement trailer, and there was, you know, thousands of people watching online, but there's also a huge crowd of people in person, sat in rows of chairs with a huge projector showing the trailer, and we were up on like a mezzanine watching. And I always remember, because Josh and I were just like, nervously waiting to hear what reaction we get to people like seeing the trailer for the first time. And it got a huge round of applause and cheers after the trailer had completed. And we looked at each other and just were like, whew, thank goodness for that. Because if they hated it, it was like, well, what do we do now? That's like, would be awful. And it was so public. It was so visible. And I remember that really fondly, because it was a massive relief, and B, it was just like, that was like the first major sort of public thing we did, and it went well. So yeah, those are what I remember. I'm hoping we can top it. I'm hoping with Bish we'll get, you know, I hope we can get some amazing experiences like that. And we're going to Gamescom this year and taking Bish with us. So it'll be amazing there to be able to see people play it in person and sort of get that firsthand feedback. And you always just want to see people having a great time playing something that you've made. And there's no other experience like it. It's amazing.
Really beautiful stories. Thanks for sharing. I can imagine it must be really cool to see your own creation on screen and then a lot of people cheering.
Oh, it was insane. Like, who else gets that? It's mad. And, you know, from working in graphic design for like a decade, you never, you know, you send something off to a client, see something in print or on screen, you know, you don't get that feedback, that visceral feedback of people being like actively engaging with it. Whereas, you know, love it or hate it, within game development, you'll hear if people like it or hate it.
So James, final question. If you had any advice you could give to fellow indie devs, what would it be?
I know nothing. What advice could I give? I need the advice. I don't know. I mean, I think I'm just very lucky. I found someone that I can work with that shares my vision. And, you know, you just, to other indie devs, what would I say? You got to think from the player's perspective. You know, are they going to understand what you're making? Can you communicate your message coherently? And I mean, I'm not saying I can, but can you get your game across in an image, in a GIF? You know, it's the sad reality of, you could have the most amazing game, but if people can't see what it is or experience it,
you're going to have a tough time, I think. I think certainly with our first game, you know, it didn't translate very well in still form, but in moving, you know, in GIFs and in video clips, it was so much more understandable. And sort of going into this, you know, we've sort of been informed by that. And it's like, okay, are we able to communicate what the game is in still form? I think it's a bit better. I wouldn't say it's perfect, but it's certainly much more readable. So yeah, I mean, my advice is nobody knows anything. And you just got to figure it out. That's my advice.
Yeah, so that were three good advices, I might add. So first, find someone you like to work with, or in your case, someone you can tolerate to work with. Greetings to Josh.
No, I to be clear, I am joking. He's great. He tolerates me. He tolerates me. He hates all my puns. He hates everything. No.
Perfect match.
Yeah, it works out well.
Be able to transport your vision or to explain what you are doing. That's also very valuable advice, I think.
That's it. What's the hook? You know, can you stand out? And yeah, it's the big thing facing so many, you know, just getting visibility. I don't have the answer. How do you do it? It's so difficult. Sometimes you get lucky. But if you go into it thinking from the start, like how is this going to translate? You might find yourself being able to make more games. I don't know.
That's it, basically. So these were all of the questions. Thank you so much for being on our show. We wish you all the best with the development of Bish Bash Bots, and we'll be sure to visit you guys at Gamescom this year. And to our listeners, also make sure to swing by. Where will you be located?
I actually don't know. I don't know. We'll be somewhere. We'll be with the Firestoke booth, so we'll be next to Haunty. Find them, you'll find us.
When you're listening to this episode, you will also find the information where to find James and Josh and Bish Bash Bots on the Gamescom as well. So the game will release September-ish this year. Keep an eye out on it. And yeah, all the best to you guys. And thanks so much for being on the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having us. And yeah, thank you to your listeners. Give us a wish list. It really helps us out and on Steam. And yeah, no, it's been great fun. Thank you for having me.